Okay, well, welcome back to another episode of the Todos Mathematics for All podcast. Twice a month, and sometimes more frequently, we bring you discussions with the movers and shakers in the world of mathematics education on topics aligned with our mission statement. The mission of Todos Mathematics for All is to advocate for equity and high-quality mathematics education for all students, in particular Latina and Latino students. Well, this episode, we're going to be talking about TEEM, TEEM, T-E-E-M, the Journal of Todos. TEEM stands for Teaching for Excellence and Equity in Mathematics. You do have to be a member of Todos to access the most recent issues of TEEM. Otherwise, you have to wait until they archive. So to access the issues we are talking about today, you do have to be a member. Today, we'll talk with the guest editors of a new two-part special issue from TEEM on multilingual students in the mathematics classroom. That's right, two brand new journal issues focused on multilingual learners in mathematics. So if you are looking for the research, we have it. My guests today will introduce themselves, and then we will learn all about TEEM, and in particular, these two special issues. Along the way, we'll talk about the importance of empirical research into supporting multilingual students, translanguaging, and why it's important to keep a research focus on the brilliance and the needs of multilingual students in mathematics classrooms. All right.
Sure. I'm Craig Willie. I'm Associate Professor of Mathematics Education and Teacher Education at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis.
Hi, I'm Xandra DiRaggio. I am an associate professor in math education at the University of Missouri, also known as Mizzou.
I'm Sarah Roberts. I'm an assistant professor of mathematics education at University of California, Santa Barbara.
And I'm Bill Zahner. I'm an associate professor of mathematics education at San Diego State University.
Wonderful. And together, you are the guest editors of the special issue of Teaching for Excellence and Equity in Mathematics that's focused on English learners in the math classroom. So let's go ahead and get started. So a variety of our listeners might not be familiar with what we're going to call TEEM, right? Which is the TEEM is the acronym for Teaching for Excellence and Equity in Mathematics. So Craig, you want to tell us a little bit about what TEEM is, who it's for, all that good stuff?
Sure. I describe TEEM as an academic journal for math and equity-focused practitioners. And there's three features that distinguish TEEM, and namely audience, article design, and focus on equity. So about audience, these practitioners could be classroom teachers, and most often are, bilingual educators, or educators with specific responsibilities to support multilingual students, coaches, school leaders, administrators, and also mathematics teacher educators. So it's with this audience in mind that article design, I think, has emerged. So my take is that the aim of TEEM is to have articles that are grounded with and by rich critical theory and empirical research, but they also operationalize key concepts. So they showcase cutting-edge approaches, ideas, and classroom practices that address stubborn and historical inequities. And beyond just the context and style, the articles are designed to generate discussions. So they're teaching tools that not only inform, but kind of instigate positive change, you know, whether that be kind of in how we interact with multilingual learners or Hispanic, Latinx, or Indigenous students in our classrooms, or if it's more proposals to address systemic change. And so that leads us to the third thing, which is equity. And this might be the most important, and that distinguishes TEEM. I mean, Todos is an equity-focused organization, and TEEM, it necessarily provides an equity-focused outlet. So articles must align with Todos' mission, which is to advocate for equitable and high quality mathematics education for all students, but in particular, Hispanic, Latino, or Latinx students. And we do this by increasing the equity awareness of educators and their ability to foster students' proficiency in rigorous and coherent mathematics. So as the title of the journal suggests, TEEM aims to engage excellence and equity simultaneously when they are too often kind of falsely put in as a false dichotomy. And to me, this approach also allows educators to kind of to be critical and to name instantiations of systemic oppression in schooling while also sharing or kind of shining a light on a productive way forward. That's kind of my sense of the journal and what makes it so special.
Awesome. Did anybody want to add anything else onto that?
I will add that if there are teachers or graduate students listening, I think it's a great place for everybody to showcase their work. And I think that it's a pretty supportive journal so that if you do submit something or you have an idea and you reach out to the editors, they're pretty happy to work with folks on ideas and developing those.
Awesome. Thanks.
I'll say one more thing. One of the, in the call for manuscripts, one of the formats or kind of formats of an article is a vision or a vignette, an example of classroom practices that are supportive that kind of showcase what I described, equity-oriented practices or solutions to stubborn inequities. This is not a traditional format for academic journals. So while we kind of welcome and desire more of those, we don't get that many. So if you have something specific around classroom practices, this is the place to publish it.
That sounds really good. It also sounds like because it's such a supportive environment that if somebody is perhaps interested in writing something, but I mean, talk about equity, maybe has not had the experience or feels like they don't have the time, that editors could be pretty savvy and kind of point them in the direction of maybe even potential writing partners, right? Or that's great. I think that works a lot in the same vein as like the mentoring piece of TOTOS, right? Which is, it's always felt to me like we're really here to really build up the next generation of teachers, scholars. So let's go on to the main event and talk a little bit about this new issue that just came out. Zandra, you want to tell us about this and how this special issue came about?
Sure. It's actually going to be two issues of a special issue on multilingual learners, and Sarah can talk about that more in a minute. But so like the origin story of the four of us, I think, is that Craig, Bill, and I got together a lot during grad school as part of Samela events. I feel like that's where I first encountered you all. And then we kept getting put in symposia and stuff with Sarah because we all did work with English learners. So that was a long time ago now, it feels like.
You want to say real quick what Samela is? Because we all know, but.
Bill, go ahead. Tell them what Samela is. Because I actually was like a Klingon. I didn't actually get, I like inviting myself somehow. So.
I was like satellite Samela in the Northwest with Julia. Yeah.
I think Samela was, it was a National Science Foundation supported center. And Samela is kind of an acronym, but it's one of those acronyms that's not exactly an acronym, that was the Center for the Mathematics Education of Latinos and Latinas. The PIs were Marta Seville. Oh, I'm not going to name them all. There were many co-PIs from many institutions, and I'm not going to name them all because I'll get it wrong.
But it was almost entirely Latina women, right? Were the PIs on this project?
Yep. Yeah. And it was four universities. So University of Arizona, University of New Mexico, University of Illinois, Chicago, and UC Santa Cruz.
Awesome.
So anyway, that was a big center. Lots of us were involved, and it's kind of carried on through the years.
And still has probably, in my opinion, at least one of the most impressive like research resource lists of all the work that came out of Samela, the publications. Yeah, so it's still kind of unique in that respect, right?
Yeah. Yeah, TOTOS folks are like heavily intertwined with Samela. So it's kind of funny. It's very like, you can see how a lot of us came together in various ways. I just tagged along because I got UGA money to send me there. And I was like, great, I'm gonna play with these guys. They're fun. And so Sarah came in because we kept getting grouped together at different conferences because we all had a common research interest. And we were like, we should write together. And then we started doing projects together. We had a lit review in research for educational or review of educational research come out in 2018. And we also did the PME&A, which is a conference, a math ed working group on English learners. for several years. And I think this specifically came out of that work when we kept promising that we would do a special issue, and we finally did it, which is very exciting to see it come to fruition. And also we were all involved in a translanguaging study group that was held virtually, gosh, I don't remember, fall and summer of 2019, I wanna say. So a lot of us were studying together. We were continuing to work together and learn together. And so this was kind of an output of like, we want to showcase some of the people that we've worked with in their work and find a way to highlight the work that's been done recently in with multilingual learners. And particularly we were interested in showcasing some of the work using newer frameworks in math ed, such as translanguaging.
Do you happen to have a quick definition of translanguaging? Anyone for, you know?
I mean, like a quick, you could read the issue and you could see like a very nice thorough treatment, but basically it's a more a view of language as very fluid rather than fixed. So like people are always drawing on multiple languages and languaging practices, and there's not like a clean division between languages. It's the practice of using language in all the languages that we use continuously, which is different than just saying like, I speak English, I speak Spanish, whatever. It's like a more complicated and flexible view of language. I don't know if that helps.
Would you say it kind of like pushes forward, if some of us were brought up with the ideas of like code switching, right? In relation to that, it's kind of like, I don't know if you want to describe it in relation to that, because that might be what people feel is familiar to them.
I think it's kind of like a more progressive view than that. So I think a lot of the code switching stuff seemed to portray it as more purposeful or just like distinct languages still, but that you're switching between distinct languages. And then so translanguaging would just say like there's a body of languages and it's not as important which formal, you know, languages they are, but you're always just naturally using words. So if I curse in Portuguese, it's just because it feels like I'm not purposely choosing that. It's just, that's what rolls off my tongue, you know? So I'm sure my co-authors and co-editors have better ideas.
Does anybody want to add anything on about translanguaging? One thing that comes to mind for me is, so I think it's Ofelia Garcia, who's one of like the key theorizers around translanguaging, and she talks about like the political component of like unofficial languages that I always found really interesting. So like, you know, looking at you know, for example, the example of Spanglish, and looking at it as like valid linguistic practice as opposed to saying you're not properly speaking Spanish, you're not properly speaking English, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's not less than, it's like everything's equal footing. There's not like, I don't know, people say like broken English and things like that. And like, we want to get away from that notion. Sorry, Craig, go ahead.
No. I think what you described, Zandra, is really spot on for a quick, concise summary. But to Maria's point, you know, code switching has had great value in kind of focusing on the assets of multilingualism, right? But certainly things get co-opted and there's all these political dynamics around multilingual learners. For example, you know, oh, they code switch because they're not proficient in Spanish nor English, you know, is like a common perception. Or we need to, they're drawing on Spanish because they aren't ready in English. So we need to do more emphasis on English. All these kind of these solutions to perceived problems, where translanguaging kind of says there's other things that we need to focus our attention on, community and how community evolves, how we, you know, treat people as linguistic learners. And then importantly, like Xander pointed out, that lingualism isn't something that you reach some kind of competency and then you can use it, you know. You aren't considered bilingual once you pass a proficiency exam in a language, you know, and the utility of those languages, you know, ought to be recognized. And even if it's kind of indistinguishable, it ought to be recognized as fluid.
Wow. So I would anticipate then that the impact of this research would be to help move forward those projects around how we see students as whole human beings, that they're not broken or in need of knowing something more before we can validate their knowledge. And this is I mean, this is a very interesting time to be doing that too. But let's turn back to the process of pulling this together. Because Xander, you alluded to it, that it's been in process for a while. Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about like what it was like to bring this together, bring these scholars together? Anything about the process?
Sure. So we started this process. Clearly, this process started during the PMENA conference and kind of getting this idea of doing a special issue during the conference. And then it was about summer of 2019, we initially set out to set a timeline and write our call for the special issue, and we worked backward from there. In June 2019, we posted the initial call and had articles due for mid-September of 2019. We worked together previously on a number of projects, so we had kind of a system of how we worked together, such as when we worked on our RER review. So we're really excited with the number of articles that we received, and really the number of quality articles we received. After recruiting our reviewers for each of the articles, we sent them out all for reviews. We ended up with getting and going through that whole process, we found out that, we don't just have one issue. We ended up with two issues. So we, which is pretty amazing, because we have an issue that's focused singularly on translanguaging, and then one that's more focused more generally on multilingual learners. So we're really excited about that. So this process from start to finish, it started generally around, June 2019, is completing around now with our final edits on the second issue.
Is that fairly fast? I don't know. That just seems like you pulled it together pretty quick.
Well, we're kind of a speedy little group. We have the other thing is, I think we really want to thank it's not just us who've been involved in this process. Larry Lester and Susie Hackinson have been amazing with their editorial work and really pulling together that issue. They're pretty amazing, and we're really thankful for them. So,
and the reviewers,
so many reviewers, and the articles, they don't generally go through just one review, they go through a couple of reviews, and so we're really thankful for our reviewers for helping to make this happen. So
that's awesome. So in general, is team looking for reviewers, do you think? Like, that could be a message we get out to our members.
Yeah, I think that team is always looking for reviewers and people who are interested in being stewards to the community and reading really quality articles and helping to improve the quality of those articles and help move along scholars. I think that that's something that we can always use.
Awesome.
I was just going to say that I've never heard an editor say, "I'm all good on reviewers, thanks."
Yeah, I was realizing, I was like, oh, I'm asking one of those questions. It's not a question, but we'll see. Yeah, Bill, tell us a little bit more. What are you stoked on? What are you excited about?
Well, I think there's a couple of really innovative articles in both of the special issues. I mean, actually, everything that's coming out is really exciting. So I don't necessarily want to name one or two that are favorites, because that's like naming your favorite child. But I think that I'm really excited about the work pushing boundaries in lots of interesting and different directions. So each article seems to be adding something new or different to what we know about the phenomenon of educating multilingual learners. I should say too that I think we have been pretty clear thinking about the students who we call English learners or who are labeled as English learners, but also the translanguaging issue, for example, is getting us to think about the problematic assumptions that are built into that kind of label, right? That the target is to acquire English, and often implied in that is that other languages are less than, right? And I think that we reject that assumption. So that's just one example. I think that the special issue is helping us reframe as a field the ways that we talk about the students who are interested in understanding, improving education, and so on. So that's one thing I'm pretty excited about. I think the opportunity to showcase work from a really diverse group of authors from different parts of the country, working in really different contexts, is another nice phenomenon. You know, I feel like I'm coming out of the kind of the urban Southern California context, which I like and, you know, is home, and at the same time is maybe overrepresented in some of the research literature or in some of the discussions. And so I think it's really nice that we have works coming from a variety of places geographically and then a variety of contexts kind of linguistically. So from the Southeast, from the, you know, from Texas, which I guess is kind of its own little world. But from the US context, it's really helpful to have that diversity of perspectives. And again, I think for Todos as a community, it's nice to kind of show how this community has really spread out from kind of its Southwestern origins to be a much more national phenomenon. So those are a couple of things I'm really excited about. And every paper, I don't want to name any now because now I'm going to get in trouble, but every paper is really interesting and worth the read. So I'm sharing this with all of my students, like, hey, have you seen this yet? Check this out. And I hope everyone else is doing the same. So, and also, of course, signing up their students and their friends and colleagues for Todos memberships. So,
which are amazingly affordable compared to a lot of the memberships out there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's actually
Todos discounts for pre-service teachers too. You know, hey,
I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yeah,
that's good to know. I will share that with all of my students tonight. So,
Sarah, you want to add anything onto that? Anything that you're also excited about?
I'm pretty excited about. I agree with Bill. This the number of voices and the different voices that we have in this in these two issues. I think the number of different perspectives that we have, I think it's really important, and the different ideas that we're bringing together. And I think that one of the things that we found in our literature review is that there really aren't a ton of articles, unfortunately, about multilingual learners. And so the fact that we have two concerted issues solely about multilingual learners, I think is a really important statement in the field. And I think that it's sorely needed. So I think it's good. I think it's really important.
Awesome. All right. Any closing thoughts from anyone in the group?
I will bring up that we are talking about multilingual students, and anytime I do, I try to remind everyone that's listening that we still have a dire immigration crisis in this country. There are still children living in inhumane conditions and being separated from families at the border, and I think November 3rd is a great way to show that you care about what's happening in this country and make sure that you go out and vote and consider those children as you cast your vote.
I'll just add to that, you know, sometimes we're asked, why are we still talking about supporting English learners? We've been talking about it for decades and decades and decades, you know, and Xander just nailed it, why we're still talking about it. I mean, until, as long as immigration will be politicized and bastardized as it is, and immigrants treated like, inferior ways, and not just inferior ways. That's an understatement, right? But if we could just settle on inferior, that'd be great. But it's actually inhumanely, as she pointed out. But as long as they're treated in inferior ways, it's no secret that whiteness in our country and white dominance has led to a missionary and saviorist complex that runs deep, you know, and we'll never be able to capitalize on assets as we've been trying to push if we're consistently obsessed with deficits or inferiority. So that's a big push that I think scholarship and classroom practices needs to address if we're going to make any headway.
And I'll just say relatedly, so I'm heading the advocacy committee and the TOTOS blog is now in with us. But it would be great to hear if any teachers put any ideas from this issue, either of the special issues, into practice, going along with what Craig's saying about asset-based or practices. So if anybody uses anything from the articles with pre-service teachers, with in-service teachers, using it with students, drawing on ideas, I'm happy to help you write a blog to share what you did for other people. Because we would really like to bridge practice with what we're doing, because we were really trying to bring in practices that work or things to consider as a teacher and in classroom practice. So send them our way. Like, feel free to email me. We can put the email, wherever it is.
Would a first step might also be to tweet out with a certain hashtag or something?
That'd be great if you had such a hashtag.
Do you have a hashtag? Come on, advocacy.
I mean, we just did the hashtag TOTOS summer read, but that doesn't really seem adequate. So you could just tag TOTOS math.
Okay.
Like that.
Yes, handle. Tag TOTOS math. All right.
Yeah.
That sounds really great.
A hashtag would have been a great idea. Yes. Think of one. Send us a hashtag idea.
TOTOS is all about grassroots crowdsourcing. So send us everything, everybody. What I think also that Zandra, you and Craig are talking about is really bringing back the, that we as teachers, as people, like, we're the people who implement practice, but we're also multidimensional people, right? So we have to have these deep understandings about how our actions in the classroom, out of the classroom, who we are, like, impacts how we work with multilingual students, how we work with anybody, right? And so the connection to the political is important. The connection to humanity is important. And, you know, similar to how translanguaging perhaps challenges how we compartmentalize language, it also sounds like that connection between practice and theory is also about splitting that compartmentalization between, like, who I am in the classroom and who I am out of the classroom to some extent. And really thinking carefully about that.
Yeah. It's like, so I don't know if you all, when you like study teacher ed or whatever, people were like, don't smile until Christmas or whatever this crazy advice was that we got. But I was like, how is that even, you're telling me to shut down a big part of who I love smiling. And I'm a happy person. And to think that you can shed a big part of your identity, or that your identity doesn't bleed into the classroom with your practice and when you work with kids, is just like, it's just not normal to think that way. Like, whatever your politics are outside the classroom, they're not going to bleed into what you do with children. Like, that's insane, right? So, like, I think we do need to acknowledge people are, like, complicated, they're humans, and all aspects of your identity play into what you do every day. And if you're with somebody like every day, all day, like elementary teachers, of course what you do outside of the classroom is going to come into what you do in the classroom. So make good choices, informed choices.
And being informed can start with reading the first of the two special issues from TEAM, taking it from there. Yep.
And when do we know when the second special issue is coming out? The first one just came out about a month ago, or a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that Susie has been very busy the last couple of days. So
she has. Sure. She's amazing. And her eye to detail, her and Larry both and Marta are, like, amazing. I think I've heard a week or two. So it's September 9th today. So, like, in a week or two, you should see some tweets come out about this.
And that's so exciting. So just around when this episode of the podcast is probably going to be released, right? So
Cool.
It'll take a little while to edit it. So, So when this round one is getting released, we'll see that second issue come out, hopefully. Awesome.
I just want to add, you know, you asked a big question about the hopes, dreams, and fears for the academic year. And I'll throw in one other thing I'm really thinking about is that there's a huge momentum around equity that I think a small group of people have been singing from that songbook for a long time. And I think that there's maybe to mix my metaphors, you know, kind of the wildfire is catching on far beyond that initial group. And so it's a difficult, really difficult year and a difficult time in lots of different ways, both in terms of the pandemic and, you know, the incredible injustices, racial injustice that we see, you know, day by day. But I guess I also feel some hope in this moment that there's a rising awareness, and I hope that awareness translates into action. So just wanted to share that thought, that reflection, because it's easy to get bogged down. I don't know. I know you got kids at home and remote learning and everything else. Like, it's so easy to get lost in these details and to forget the exciting changes that are coming out. So.
No, right on, Bill. And a big shout out to activists who didn't give up, don't give up, because this has been a struggle for a long time. And you know, I think you're right. We're seeing the movement widen, and that's not with kind of insignificant struggle. So I just wanted to point that out. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, I think going back to the TOTOS position statement with NCSM, I think the acknowledgement piece is getting a lot of, it's out there, right? Like, we're acknowledging bad things and good things, but we need to move towards action and accountability.
It would be nice to see movement to go along with the acknowledgement.
Well, I bet you're ready to read those two special issues now. Head over to the TOTOS website, www.totos-math.org. Click on the Join TOTOS button if you're not already a member. And for just $35 a year, you can have access to all the issues of Team and everything else TOTOS has to offer. And yes, pre-service teachers, if you are studying to be a teacher right now, you can join for just $15 a year. If you do get a chance to read our special issues, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet and tag us here at TOTOS, at TOTOSMath, and use the hashtag TOTOSPodcast. I just want to thank Zandra, Sarah, Craig, and Bill one more time for joining the podcast to tell us all about these two issues. Muchísimas gracias. And the TOTOS podcast is a production of TOTOS Math for All, featuring intro and outro music by San Francisco Bay Area synthwave artist Vectorhold. I've been your host, Maria Zavala. Until we see you next time, stay safe, masks on, y a seguir luchando. Adios.